Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis calling you from freezing Westchester, and I'm so excited. David L. Wilson is here. We're going to talk about his book, Wet, Warm, and Noisy, Jake Ward novel. I love Jake Ward. He just became one of my favorite people. So good morning and welcome from, I hope it's not freezing where you are.
Good morning. Yes, it is quite freezing up here in Alaska. We've got a high today of maybe 25 degrees if we're lucky, but that's the way it is in Alaska in March.
Well, we have a high of 34. Last week we had a high of 19.
Okay, it's not that much different then. But so we can be here together and talk about cold weather and commiserate perhaps. I'm happy to be here.
This is true because I had only one cup of coffee today, and I need at least four more to keep me warm. So the first scene in the book is a flashback. How did you create that? And I don't know why I spelled that wrong. And the main character signs up in a shooting range. I always wanted to do that. I always wanted to learn how to shoot a gun in a shooting range with the right way. So how did you create the first two scenes?
Well, for the first scene, it's a flashback scene, exactly, and it sets an important plot point that's revealed much later in one of the other characters. So it's kind of one of those things where I wonder what's going on with that first scene. You got a kid paddling around on a lake in Kentucky and catching fish. How does that matter? And you don't find out how that matters until much later, but it does. And so the way I kind of came up with that is we actually have family who live in Kentucky, and I visited that place. And so as I was writing that chapter, I was thinking about the places we visited around Lake Barkley and Lake Kentucky there in western Kentucky. And it's just a beautiful area, huge lake. It's actually a river that was flooded by the Army Corps of Engineers and made a huge lake. And you've got boats going up and down, and there are these channels where these jet boats go flying through super fast. And they've got these little side tributaries where there's all kinds of fishing and beautiful homes on the lake. It's just a gorgeous area. So it made an impression on me visiting back there. And so it was a great scene to write in the book to plant that seed for that important character development that needs to happen later on with one of the main characters. As for the shooting range, with law enforcement, it's not that hard to prepare for a good day where nobody does anything wrong, where people call you up and say, hey, I'm not committing a crime and I'm not doing anything wrong. Come on by and say hi. I mean, that's those days. Those don't require any special training, right? They don't happen very often, but they don't require any special training. But when things go bad, or in law enforcement, they say things go sideways, that's when the skills are important that you need to have in order to be able to handle those, to protect people, protect yourself as a law enforcement officer, et cetera. So, I mean, one of the worst things that can happen is a life-threatening situation and deadly force. And so law enforcement officers carry firearms, and you can't carry a tool if you don't know how to use it. So you got to be able to practice. And that shooting range scene is where our main character, Jake Ward, is trying to qualify. Because there's some basic shooting expertise you have to show on the range in order to be able to say, yeah, I can carry this gun. And he's having trouble. And that's really what that scene is about, is showing the difficulty that he's having getting back in the saddle, so to speak, because he's recovering from a life-threatening illness.
I like him. I remember what you said it was, too. So you can identify with that without saying what it is. And that's like makes it even more authentic. And I kept saying, he's a great character. He really is.
I'm glad
and
you
he
like
doesn't
him.
Stop
I'm glad
it. I've been reading a lot of books, people. I read in the last 10, 15 years, I would say a couple of thousand, maybe more. Seriously? Last week alone, I read 5. And had to review them. And when you get one like yours, and I had no idea what it was about, and yet I couldn't put it down, that was great. And then you get one that I got 2 days ago, and it's still staring at me after 20 pages. Usually I finish a book of 400 pages in 2 hours. This one is 300 pages. It's going to take me forever, which makes it hard. So I try. So the main character, though, should tell us about Alaska Bureau of Investigations and the Technical Crime Unit. What exactly do they do, and why did Jake decide that that's where he wanted to be?
So that's a great question. The TCU, the Technical Crimes Unit, so the Alaska State Troopers is the big agency, and then they have different bureaus in them, and the Alaska Bureau of Investigations is one of those bureaus, and the Technical Crimes Unit is in the Alaska Bureau of Investigations. And TCU is tasked with doing the criminal investigations that involve computers and internet and technology, and because it's such a changing field, you just get a bunch of geeks in there with badges and say, okay, figure it out, because a lot of cases that are coming along, you don't know what you're looking at, you don't know what the challenges are going to be, but it's nice having a TCU guy nearby who has that technical aptitude and has the time and the assignment to chase it down. So they're often attached to major criminal cases that are being investigated by other units, homicides and kidnappings and serious sexual assaults and home invasion robberies or anything that might have a technical aspect to it, which really is every case nowadays. So that's why this unit is so essential to the agency. It's close to my heart because I worked in it for a while. I was the supervisor for that unit for a number of years from 2011 to 2017, and I love the work there. So there's a little bit of Jake Ward in me, the desire to work in that unit. Yeah, so it was and it was just fascinating because they have primary case responsibility for the really technical stuff, like internet-related crimes. But they help in so many other different cases. They get a lot of variety in their job. They go all over the state to help, and it's fun work. It's sometimes really depressing work because there's a lot of child exploitation cases, unfortunately. But it's challenging. There's lots of puzzles, lots of computers, and I love computers. Jake Ward, he has a little bit of similar ideas about law enforcement work, the puzzles and the computers and the desire to get around Alaska and have a lot of variety.
I'm trying to learn how to do more technical stuff on my computer. I mean, it took me forever just to figure out, computer, let's put it that way, to do the word and all the rest of it in the editing. It's changing.
Yeah,
not only that. My Word sometimes freezes, and I have to yell at my husband, go fix it. And then the Outlook Express freezes, and I just want to sit down. Then I have to shut off the machine and turn it back on again. I don't know why, and it is changing. It's not the same. Even the editing quality on the thing is not the same. And sometimes when I edit something, the computer doesn't like it. They'd rather have it wrong. Really.
Yeah. They don't do what you want them to do. They do what the programmers told them to do, and that's not always the same thing.
So who is Ballard? And this was really cool. Why did he ask him to do a polygraph test? And, for those of you that have never been in court or anything like that, or never told me, that was really interesting, though. Why a polygraph test? And how do you know if somebody's lying? That's the cool part.
Yeah, that's another big part of this case that I'm not going to see in a lot of books, a polygraph. So Ballack is Ward's boss. So he's the unit supervisor for the Tactical Crimes Unit. And so he's going to be directing Jake Ward's cases and casework and telling him what to do most of the time. Now investigators have a lot of autonomy. So Jake has a lot of things that he has to do and the time to do them, and he checks in with his boss periodically. But right now, Jake's trying to come back from cancer, right? So he's having trouble. he's having trouble doing that, and so he's a little more closely supervised because he's not on full duty. He's on limited duty. He can't qualify with his firearm. He's a little frustrated about it. So Balak's trying to keep him involved, keep his spirits up, and he gives him a polygraph assignment to help out him. Polygraph. So he asked about polygraph. Well, polygraph, when it was first developed, I mean, ages ago, it was using like one method of measuring your body's reactions to things. So they used to have, back in the old days, they used to measure like blood pressure, and they'd try and see if that can tell you if you're lying, or they'd measure your sweat or measure your breathing or whatever. Well, polygraph, poly means many, right? And graph means drawings or pictures. And so it's basically several different ways of looking at your biology to see if you're getting a reaction to some sort of question. We think that polygraph tells lies, but really it doesn't do that. That's what we see on TV and in the movies and stuff, but really it tells if you're perceiving a threat. So it's looking at your body and seeing if your body thinks it's seeing a threat. And when we lie, our body treats that as a threat. So that's why polygraph works. Is it's kind of a threat detector. And the book, the novel talks about that and goes into some of the nitty-gritty of the polygraph process as Ward conducts this polygraph. So it's kind of – and that's what I tried to do with this book is I tried to impart kind of the inside scoop on how law enforcement does their work, because it's really not like Law and Order and Blue Bloods.
I know.
It's really a little it's interesting, but it's not that way. And so that's one of the things I really wanted to do is give that inside scoop. And I thought, you know what, no one's ever showed what the polygraph looks like for real. So let's see if we can do that. And so that's really what that scene's all about.
I would love to see somebody take that. See, that's interests me. Seriously? See, stuff like that is different. And it's hard to tell. Well, I read, I don't know if you know Mark Boughton. He's a former FBI agent.
No.
And he wrote two books that he asked me to read, How to Tell a Lie from the FBI and Is Your Guy Lying? And two of the best books I've ever read. Yeah, you have to look. It's fantastic. He was on my show. Very straightforward, whatever. And he explained how you tell if somebody's lying besides a polygraph test. And I've become very perceptive. You could sort of tell when you're talking to somebody if their eyes are not looking straight at you, if they're looking up or they're turning around or they sort of hesitate. You know the line. And there's a whole other whole other ways to know that you're not going to fall in. So now we have another guy. Who is Dickinson? What is his role? And why did he dismiss Anderson's testimony? Well, first of all, who's Belle? She's the one for the polygraph test, right?
Yeah, so Belle is arrested for trying to break into a warehouse, right? So, and it's a really odd situation. And when your listeners read the book, they'll be like, well, that's not really how burglaries normally happen. And they're right. That's not how burglaries normally happen. So she's not your typical criminal burglar. And so there's something weird going on with her. And Dixon, when he basically is called to the scene of the burglar, and so Belle is arrested at this scene, but she doesn't get into the warehouse, and she's not dressed for the occasion. And he's like, what is going on with this gal, right? And when he talks to her, she says something about a kidnapping. And so Dixon's like, okay, Dixon's a patrol trooper. So his job is responding in the middle of the night and handling kind of the first responder duties of making sure everybody's safe and nothing big's going on. He takes the cases he can. But when someone starts talking about kidnapping, he needs to kick that up to the investigators and get a little bit of guidance at very least. And so he brings that to the attention of his supervisor, and Balak hears about it and is like, oh, well, maybe we can get Ward involved in this one, and let's see if she's right about this kidnapping. And that's where the need for the polygraph comes in. So Belle is kind of a suspect, but once Ward meets her, she doesn't really act like your typical burglary suspect. It doesn't really fit into the box you would normally get from a criminal mastermind breaking into something in the middle of the night. She's a little gal. She doesn't really look all that healthy, and she doesn't look like he normally expects. And so the polygraph is really to find out if she's telling the truth about the kidnapping, but also maybe to find out what the heck was going on with the burglary, too. So it's kind of a dual role, and that's often what an investigator encounters when they go into a case like that. There's a lot more questions than answers, and they try and create an opportunity to speak to the suspect or victim or witness or whoever it is and just kind of fill in the blanks and figure out what else is going on here. This doesn't look like your typical case. We need some answers. And that's really what this is all about. And Balak saw the need for more information and thought, hey, I got a guy who can run polygraphs, and he needs to get back in the saddle, so to speak. Here's something that doesn't require him to shoot on the range because he can't qualify, and something he can do light duty.
Well, it's interesting, and I'm wondering, do they do this with every person that's getting a polygraph? Do they do practice questioning where they say, answer wrong, and they tell you what to answer? That was amazing. And what an odd,
yeah.
There's some red flags that went up. And why practice questioning? I think that's brilliant, because you can get a pretty good idea of whether the person is straight or not, unless you really have no perception whatsoever.
No, that's great. That's a great question. So when setting up a polygraph exam, one of the big concerns that an investigator has is the examinee is wondering if you're going to ask about that other bad thing they did. And so you need to narrow down, as an investigator, the questioning and make sure that they're not concerned about what's called an outside issue. And so in this scene, Ward is asking Bell Anderson ahead of the test what question he's going to ask her on the test. So she gets kind of heads up that, hey, I'm not going to ask about that murder you committed 10 years ago or all that stolen cars you have in your backyard or anything like that. We're only asking about the kidnapping. And what it allows the examinee to do is to focus on those questions and give good data during the question portion when he's measuring her biology and not be so worried about some other thing that it messes up the test. So that's really what the practice questioning is all about, is narrowing the focus of the examinee so they're not worried about some other thing. Because if there's an outside issue involved, it can really mess up the data, and they don't get any good results from it. So that's kind of what that's all about. But the red flags, well, Belle's not your typical examinee, not your typical burglar.
Yeah.
And definitely not your typical examinee. And she has some sort of an attention issue. And she kind of zones out a little bit. And Ward doesn't know what to make of that. He's never seen that before. And it's messing up his test, frankly. And it's causing some trouble for him.
Well, she does it on purpose. She doesn't want to make it too easy. Now, this is really cool. Yeah, I know. They put her away, whatever. So who is Dion, and how is he connected to Belle, and how in heaven blazes did she get away? I mean, that's kind of like strange. How, it's almost as if somebody paid somebody to get her out of there.
Yeah, so without going into too many details on how that happens, Dion is kind of comes to Belle's rescue, so to speak. So it becomes pretty clear. So the book is mainly written from the perspective of Jake Ward, but there are a few chapters written from the perspective of Belle Anderson. So Belle, basically during her departure, we'll say, from the polygraph exam, she kind of reveals that this character Dion is part of the same sort of big deal that she's involved in. She's involved in something, and it wasn't a burglary. And she's part of this criminal activity that's kind of gotten her in a bad way and in some trouble. And Dion also had He owes our main antagonist something. And so the main bad guy, who we haven't met in the book yet at this point, he has done something for Belle and Dion. He's healed them of some pretty serious injuries or I would say illnesses. And so they're working for him to a certain extent here. And Dion basically comes to Bell's aid, and spirits are out of there.
Well, he owes it to her. Otherwise, he's not going to be spirited anywhere except 6 feet under, maybe, which is really scary. So what is accurate and a subscription to find out how and why? And how does Jake learn about Belle's history? She's really smart, isn't she? She's not stupid.
Yeah. No, she's smart. She was going to school for physics and biology, and she's brilliant. So it's like, what's she doing getting contacted by the cops and trying to break into warehouses and stuff? This is not your typical suspect here, sure. Accurant is one of many databases that law enforcement officers in Alaska use to find out information about suspects, victims, witnesses, addresses, cars, phone numbers, all kinds of stuff. There's your typical, you know, look them up in your law enforcement database kind of thing. And there's law enforcement databases. Alaska has the Alaska Records Management System. They're called RMS, their record management system. And that's primarily in use by the troopers and some of the smaller agencies. Anchorage, which is a medium-sized city, about 300,000 people in Alaska, the Anchorage Police Department has their own database. But sometimes those law enforcement databases just aren't enough information, and you got to go out to the public domain and look through Department of Commerce business records and property tax records and stuff to find what's going on with a suspect or a vehicle or something like that. And Accurant actually is a subscription database, and they have a law enforcement product. They go out and they grab data from utilities and all kinds of stuff, and make it available for law enforcement to be able to search things out. And Accurant is often better than the law enforcement databases at finding essential information about where someone lives and what they're doing. So be careful about where your data goes, right? Because it might end up in Accurant or somewhere else.
I shut off my location on my phone, and ever so often I Google myself. So I know that it's, you know, my reviews. I didn't realize I was all over the place. And when I do my radio show, this radio show goes to Spotify. They just took it. Apple, iTunes, Advantage, all sorts of places play my radio show. And that's why I've been getting too many people that are asking me for interviews. For real. People are actually, they listen, but I had a problem, and I changed the listening, the calling number. So I only give it to the people that are on the show, and I tell them don't share it. There's some strange people in the world, and I don't trust them. So I made the show private until it goes public after the show. Now, this is really amazing. We meet Belle, and we learn about her daughter. So why is she in a bad place? And Richard, oh, my God, he's crazy.
Yeah, so Richard's a bad guy.
I know. I don't like him.
Most people don't like the bad guy. I don't really like bad guys.
Well, he's a sick bad guy.
He is a sick bad guy. But he thinks he's doing things for good reasons, right? So most my career as a trooper, I didn't meet criminals who were out there to hurt everybody. That's just not really something you see a lot. They may be out there doing things you wouldn't like to see them do, but it's all about taking care of themselves, their own ambitions and goals, and taking care of what they want, right? So it's really more about selfishness than anything. And Richard's no different than those guys. I mean, he's got some goals, and he's taking care of them, and he just doesn't seem to care how it hurts anybody else. And Belle gets kind of sucked into his world. But she's brilliant. She's young. She's enthusiastic. But as you learn from her backstory we learned about in the novel, she doesn't have a lot of guidance from a parent. She doesn't have any mom or dad around, and she's in the university and excited about the science and stuff that she's learning, and she gets kind of sucked into this world of Richard, and she falls in love with the guy. And, you know, it's you can kind of see that happening. A young, bright lady who meets a man who's intelligent and has some resources and excited about the same thing she's excited about, and she gets wrapped up in his world and ends up having a child by him. So now she's even more vulnerable to the guy, right, because she needs him to help her take care of the kid. And she doesn't have a job or anything. She was a student in college, so she's got to pay the bills. She's got to take care of herself and the kid. And so you can imagine how that might, make her a little bit more needy. And then, to boot, it gets even worse because she gets sick. And so her illness makes her even more vulnerable. And that's kind of why she's in this bad place. And you can kind of sympathize with that. I mean, if we put ourselves in her shoes, I mean, would we really do anything much differently than she was doing in the book? Probably not. And so that's really where she's at.
What scared me is witnessing the test that he did to other people and then to her. And I'm like, oh, my God, he's really out of his mind. He could die. And obviously he didn't.
Yeah.
He really didn't care. So this is interesting. Jake was with somebody named Jennifer, and he had vivid, lucid dreams. So why does he remember her? And where does he start with the – and how he needs a warrant to get information, doesn't he?
Yeah. So, Jennifer is Jake's ex. And she's there in the story to kind of help paint the picture of loss that's involved – in his world. One of the main character arcs involving Jake Ward is the fact that he's gone through some rough times with his health battle. And he's kind of had a Pyrrhic victory over it. He may be coming out of it. He might have won, but there's some damage that occurred in the process. Damage to his body with his inability to qualify in the range and the neuropathy that happens with some of the drugs they gave him in his treatment, but also in his personal life. So Jennifer, I mean, they were in love, and they're on the path to be together forever, and that kind of fell apart because of his illness. And so those lingering shadows of what could have been in his life kind of echo throughout several chapters in the book. And that's kind of what I was trying to do, is show this character who's suffered. I mean, too often I see a main character in a story, and they can do no wrong, and nothing is ever difficult for them, and they're just superheroes, and yay, yay. And that's just not really real life. We don't really have that. Not too many of us have gone through life and not had any scars as a result. And so I was hoping to give Ward some challenges that we can all relate to. And I think we've seen enough stories about what happens when you have cancer to know that getting through that, if you can, is going to leave some scars on you. And I have some personal experience with that because I went through that battle myself. And so that kind of comes out in the book a little bit there too. And then moving on to the warrants. We have rights in this country not to be basically at the beck and call of the government and for them to be able to take what's ours without being able to show that they got a really good reason to do so. And that's really what the warrant process is all about, putting forth information to a court and having a judge review the information that the law, that the government, this is a restriction on government only, that the government thinks we did something wrong. We committed a crime, and they got to show that with a burden of proof on them before they can come and invade our privacy. Whether that means getting our phone records or coming into our house or searching in Alaska, searching our car even, you have to have a warrant. That's really where that's what's all about. And we don't see that in movies and books too often because we really just don't have a lot of law enforcement officers writing screenplays or writing novels. And so we don't kind of get the nitty-gritty behind-the-scenes stuff. And so that's one of the things I tried to do here is kind of talk a little bit about the warrant process and just educate my readers about what cops have to do in order to violate someone's rights, because that's really what it is. When you knock on someone's door and say, hey, we're coming in and we're taking your stolen guns, you have to have a piece of paper from a judge that says that's okay. And so that's what that process is all about.
Well, it's interesting because I've written, like I said, too many books. And sometimes the police go in and just say, well, do I have to get a warrant, so are you going to tell me what I want to know? Well, give me what I want to know. And basically, they don't have to give it to you. And you know, basically, they don't have to even talk to you if they don't want to. But sometimes it gets kind of wild. So he gets a video, and what does the video show, and why is it the one that Dixon had? But you did something that is really great because, I mean, I've interviewed quite a few people in law enforcement. I have DEA, CIA, FBI, detectives, everybody. And everybody, it's you to be able to show that there's interagency coordination. And I don't know if there is that today in all the agencies over here in New York or any place. Everybody's always looking to be the one in charge. How did you create it so that everybody helps everybody?
Yeah, well, that's kind of an Alaskan thing, I think. So I'll start off with talking about the video, and then I'll kind of move to the interagency cooperation thing. The video, in this particular video, it's the video that the responding trooper, Trooper Dixon, had when he initially talked to Bell in the interview room at the trooper post. And so it kind of gives the picture of how the case sort of emerged and how it came out, and it gives Ward some clues as to really what was going on with her when she was first caught in the burglary. And that's really important for her character and for his development as the plot goes further, because he's kind of getting caught up in this puzzle of Belle Anderson, and she's gone now, and he's trying to chase her down, basically. And so knowing more about her is important. He can't figure out, is she one of the bad guys, or is she a victim, right? So that's kind of an important thing. And that's another theme in the book is, you know, is she a bad guy or is she a victim? And she kind of exhibits characteristics of both. And that enigma is part of what's kind of drawn him in and has him continuing to investigate, even though he's not supposed to be, because he's on limited duty because of his nerves being shot and not being able to qualify. So that's kind of an important piece, is we get a picture of, you know, kind of a little snapshot in time of Belle when she was first arrested that night by Dixon. And then on the question of interagency coordination, maybe where you are, there are so many people, there are so many different agencies that overlap. They probably have a lot of resources, and that's just not the case in Alaska. We have 660,000 square miles in Alaska and 700,000 people, so it's almost like a square mile per person up here. Right, so we're spread out. There's just not a lot of people, and there's not a lot of law enforcement officers either. And so quite often I remember as a trooper on patrol being, you know, 50 miles away from the nearest trooper or a police officer, and you don't have help. You really don't have help. There is no, I want to take this case from you, you should have this case. There's no real fight over jurisdiction, because really, if you found it, it's probably yours because you're the only one around. And we, up here, we need our law enforcement officer buddies to help us, because otherwise it's often just us. So there's it's kind of a bond among law enforcement in Alaska, because there are so few of us. We relish and value the help we do get. And if someone's not, if we're not getting along with someone for some reason or some agency, we kind of get over it, because we need each other is kind of what it comes down to, whether it be the state, the locals, the local police officers in each city, or the federal officers, because we don't even have county up here. There's no county sheriff or anything like that in this area at all. It's just state or city or federal. And so there's just not a lot of cops.
That's amazing. You know, there was a program about Alaskan Daily with Hillary Swank that they took off. I don't know why. It was probably the most realistic program about Alaska. And the newspapers and the city and it was about Anchorage. It was just so amazing. And yet they took it off. They said, you know, people didn't understand it, blah, blah, blah. It really gave us a good picture of what law enforcement went to go through in Alaska and what the newspapers was. It's really too bad. So it brings me to my next question. In Chapter 12, we get to know Belle and Abby, and she's afraid of Richard because he said, if you don't do it, he will replace you. So tell us about how Bell endured everything and about the experiments that he did, because he's crazy.
Yeah, Richard's kind of out there. So we know about Bell, and we know that she's kind of beholden to Richard, and she's got her daughter to think about, Abby.
Yeah.
Richard, the book talks about how he's helped her overcome her illness, right? But
yeah.
There's a cost that she's paid because Richard's doing these medical experiments, and that's right on the back of the book, talking about kind of the cross between medical experiments and consciousness and all that. So there's some science in this book that Richard's playing with. Richard's a scientist, and he's conducting these experiments. But Belle, because she's been through some treatment, it's specifically prepared her brain a little better than your typical person. And so her brain's a little more resilient to the things that he wants to do, so he can poke and prod and learn what he wants to learn about the consciousness and the human brain, and she basically has to endure it. Because what's she going to do? I mean, she's part of these things. She's kind of – they're not legal experiments, and she's part and parcel to it. And she also has a kid to think about, and she's dependent on this guy. So Belle is a lab rat, and that's basically kind of where I hope my readers look at that and kind of have their heartstrings pulled a little bit. Because she didn't really have any choice. She's a rat in a trap, and this guy's playing with her mind.
This is true. Before I forget, Wednesday, I can't believe this. My show's booked to the end of August, everybody. I have no idea why, but we are. Now, on Wednesday, New York Times author Andrea Kane struck dead. On the 11th, John Land and Joe Ayers leave no trace. On the 13th, we have Elizabeth Collins. On the 14th, we have Baron Butcher, Marilyn Levinson, and Dick Belsky on a panel show. And if anybody else wants to join it, you get to brag about yourself and talk about your writing or whatever you want. I just decided to do that. On the 20th, we have Rise to Rebellion. And on the 18th, we have, I have it over here somewhere. Oh, yes, Sacrifice of Life. And that's just some of what's going on in March. Because we look, like I said, till the end of month. And if anybody has anything coming out in June or August, let me know, because I don't do anything in July. It's my month to just take off and do whatever. But this really is great. So now we have Luke. Who is Luke, and why does he help Ward? And how does Ward become part of the takedown team? Because Bullock cuts him some slack, and I thought that was really cool. I like the guy.
So Luke, he's kind of a likable character. He's a kid who works in a warehouse. And it was... another piece of Ward trying to chase down what's going on with this puzzle he's trying to unravel. Yeah. I mean, he's kind of figured out that there's some medical sort of stuff going on. He finds this warehouse out in the Matsu Valley. It's outside of Anchorage, about 45 minutes to an hour. And he has a contact with a kid there just to kind of figure out what's going on. This is the warehouse that Belle was caught trying to break into. And so Ward's understandably, what the heck was she looking for? What's in there? And so that's kind of where that contact comes up. And I tried to have a little bit of fun with that interaction because Luke's a little bit of a quirky kid. Hopefully that was that's fun for the readers. But it's important to show law enforcement when they're chasing down a case, they scratch on a lot of different things because – there's a lot to do, and you never know what's going to reveal that piece of information that breaks the case open, right? So they got to dig a lot of holes to find the treasure, and this is one of those efforts. He's out there just trying to dig in. He spends a lot of time on the computer looking at databases, trying to find links to people, but the best police work is really knocking on doors and talking to people, stuff that you can't find in a computer. And so this is one of those scenes where he's knocking on a door and talking to people. As far as the takedown team, so at that point in the story, they've identified Dion. They don't know who he is yet, but they know where he is. And so
yeah.
Ward becomes part of that effort to try and capture the guy who broke into the courthouse and rescued Bell, or helped Bell escape, as the case may be. And so this was a great opportunity for me to show a little bit about what a SWAT operation looks like. In Alaska State Troopers speak, we call it CERT, not SWAT. It's Special Emergency Reaction Team. But it's the same thing, right? You have special weapons and training and all that for these guys that spend a lot of time training on how to deal with very high-risk situations, and this is one of those. You got a guy who's used force and likely to do so again, and he's holed up in an apartment, and we got to figure out a way to take him down. And so Jake becomes part of the team. He's still on light duty, but he's a trained negotiator. And so his sergeant, Balak, basically pulls a favor and gets him as a negotiator for this event. But Ward doesn't find out until he gets there and is supposed to show up and help that he's actually the backup negotiator. So he's kind of sidelined even so. And he realizes that his boss is just trying to be kind to him and keep him involved, but really doesn't want to put him in harm's way. And so he doesn't really have a major role in this. But he does have an ability to see what's going on, and it also gives the reader a way to kind of see a little bit about how those special events, those CERT team deployments kind of take place, and a little bit about behind the scenes what happens to prepare for them at the pre-op briefing and that kind of stuff. Another chance to kind of talk about how law enforcement really works.
That is so exciting. I didn't do one last year. I did one the year before, and I would love to do it again in maybe June, well, when I have a 5 minutes. I did a show with law enforcement, different branches of law enforcement, CIA, FBI, regular lieutenants, officers, and we talked about their different roles and how they help and how they interact in different places. Some were in Portland, some were in, one or two were in Alaska, all over the place. Everybody joined in this particular debate. It was interesting.
Wow.
To get to learn what happens when things go wrong. How do you handle it? How do you get your boss to listen when you know you're right and they don't listen? And it does happen where people, you know, get away and the big people don't want to know, as we see in the news every day. So... This other part got me interested. Define quantum physics and telekinesis. That's kind of interesting, the telekinesis part.
Yeah, so this book, it's kind of interesting because there's a real gritty law enforcement aspect to it. But then there's the science that comes in and kind of takes into the sci-fi world, right? You get kind of a sci-fi supernatural sort of plot developing later in the book. And quantum physics, it's kind of they throw that term around a lot nowadays, and I'm no physicist, but I've read more than a few papers on some of the subjects that are talked about in this book. One of the big sort of questions right now in the physics world is the issue of consciousness, because they still can't figure out how our human brains do what they do. And that's kind of the big enigma in medical science right now is, how does the brain work? How does it do what it does? And recently they're learning that there's quantum activity in the brain. Oh, that's kind of messing with everybody's idea of brains and minds and souls and that sort of stuff. And so that's where some of the science comes in. Jake Ward learns about this university professor who's into physics, and he's big into talking about physics on TV shows and blogs and stuff like that. And somehow this guy seems to be linked to our Bell Anderson, because she took classes from the guy and she mentions him in one of her journals. And so that's kind of got Ward thinking, I need to talk to this guy. Well, he ends up at the university chasing this Mueller down and see if he can talk to the guy. And he ends up coming up in contact with one of his graduate assistants. And so there's a good conversation there about quantum physics. And there's also a scene in the book where Mueller's talking about in, on the web. He's talking about the kind of things that the brain seems to be capable of doing, and that's where the idea of telekinesis comes in and that sort of stuff, sort of in a theoretical standpoint. But there's a, it also comes into play in the actual book later, where there's a, an actual scene where we see some really sci-fi weird stuff happening.
Well, what really got me scared is, I know you don't kill off a main character, but I got really upset because Jake gets taken. And so when does Foley realize that he's missing, and they try to do an experiment on him too, on Jake. And I'm saying, like, you can't go there. He's not going to do that. And how did you create the near-death experience that he had? I mean, this is like between him and Belle. I could understand where they would identify with each other, or maybe he'd want to help her because it's scary. You create the takedown and the membrane brain and memory scenes. How did he deal with that? And I was like, oh, my
yeah.
God.
It gets pretty intense there toward the end of the book. Ward's, you know, he's battling against the fact that he's not full duty. He's kind of sidelined. But now he's chasing this case, and it starts to get so weird and wacky that it's starting to get out of control. And Foley, who's kind of his brother in the in the agency, another investigator for the Alaska Bureau investigation, he and they're working together, and they find out that this thing's out of hand, and there's some sort of sci-fi aspects going on here, and they got to run this up the flagpole. Well, Ward's already kind of out there beyond where he has permission to be. He's light duty, but he's running around investigating this case anyway, and knows he's probably going to get in trouble for that. And now they're going to take the case completely away because it's just gotten so far away from even the jurisdiction of the Alaska State Troopers, probably. I mean, it's going to have to be involved with federal agencies now. It's just gotten so weird that he knows they're going to yank his chain and he's going to be off the case. So he goes off and starts doing a area canvas in an area where he thinks he's identified the suspects might be, and he gets into a confrontation. And I won't talk too much more about that, but let's just say it doesn't go as well as we would like to see it go. And Ward is taken away by our bad guy, and he becomes a subject of this experimentation now. I had to really think about how I was going to pull that off, and I thought, you know, this is going to be a bold move when you take your main character and put them, you know, under the control of your bad guy. And I think I pulled it off pretty well, but let's just say there are a lot of different versions of how that all happened, written and rewritten and rewritten before I settled on the one that worked.
Well, that's
as far as
too,
the,
because the, go on.
The near-death experiences you asked about.
Those are
fascinating. Have you ever read anything about near-death experiences or seen any movies about those?
Too many. As a matter of fact, I have to tell
you
that Jane Ann Krantz writes about it, paranormal and lucid dreams and stuff like that. And I've read a lot of book about near-death experiences, quite a few. So I know that people really have them. I think it would scare. I know
that
at times I dream something and I could tell you what happened in the morning. It's like perfect. I could write it out. And then there are times that you want to forget what you're thinking. So how do you know if somebody really has a near-death experience? And why would they want?
Yeah.
Who the heck would want one?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So most of these near-death experiences, according to the research, and I mean when I say research, it's really just anecdotal. They talk to people and they say that this happened, right? And so how can you believe them? Some of these near-death experiences, these people are actually talking about things that happened while they were flatlined. They couldn't possibly know these things. And those are the kind of near-death experiences that actually produce evidentiary value for people studying this stuff. If someone says, hey, you know, I had a heart attack and all these things I experienced and I came back, but they can't verify any of that, so that really doesn't have any evidentiary value. But when someone comes back and says, hey, you know, while I was out, this happened in the next room, and you guys did this thing on me where you're trying to resuscitate me, and I mean, those sort of specific experiences where they can actually talk about something that happened when they shouldn't have been able to, now those are of value. And there's tons of those. And so that's where I spent a lot of time researching near-death experiences and writing this book. I've read probably a dozen books on near-death experiences, watched a whole bunch of videos, and there are quite a few that have evidentiary value attached to them, and that was fascinating to me. So that helped me in knowing all of these different stories about near-death experiences and what these people go through. That helped me in writing these scenes where we've got them in the book and they're being experienced by Jake Ward and by Belle Anderson.
Now, this is really scary. This was upsetting. The end of the book, I felt so bad. I mean, after what somebody went through, and I'm going like, oh, my God, how could that happen? So where do you see Jake next, and what about the little girl? Where do you see them next? What's next for him?
Yeah, that's tough. What happens with the girl? So little Abby, she doesn't have a big part in the book. She was kind of more of a motivator for Belle, but kind of makes us all understand that situation. And Jake is kind of in a tough spot. He's been through this incredible experience that's sort of just maybe changed his perspective on life a little bit, and he's getting back in the seat to do more work. But here's a guy who's really determined. He used to be motivated by his desire to get back on top, right? He wanted to survive cancer. He wanted to get through his recovery and get back to full duty. And he thinks being an Alaska State Trooper investigator is the most amazing thing in the world, and he wants to get back to doing it the way he was doing it before. But after this experience, he's a little bit humbled. And he's got a little – his mind's been expanded to a certain extent, and he sees himself in a slightly different way. So this first book about Jake Ward is really a kind of a change in his character to be a little bit more mature, a little more humble, I think, and to give a little bit better perspective. And so he might be a little bit different character in the books to come than he was in this one, but he's still going to do his job. Here's a guy who's doing important work. He knows he's doing important work, and he wants to keep doing that kind of work. And so at the end of the book, I think we get that sense that he's going to keep on going and keep doing the work that he's been doing, just maybe with a little different style and a little different change of heart going on.
Well, wait till you hear what he has to do next, and I'm not going to tell. And I'm going like, oh, my God. It's like... Back to whatever. That was really interesting. I said, "Oh my God, it's right." So, when is your next book coming out? This is an important question.
Well, I'm working
question.
On it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm working on it. This was actually my third novel, but my first law enforcement thriller. So the other two books I wrote were actually young adult fantasy novels. They kind of helped me learn how to write, really. And so that was an adventure. The first book I wrote was published in 2018, and then the next one, the sequel to that, was the following year. And then this, today is actually the release day on this one. You can get it online.
See how
today.
I knew that, and I posted your review. It's there.
Oh, did you? Excellent. Thank you.
On Just Reviews. See, I'm having a problem with Amazon. Somebody hacked into my account about 6 months ago, and they thought it was me. I never write anything bad, so I post on Goodreads, and I'm going to post your review on LinkedIn later, and I guarantee I'm going to get a lot of people that are going to read it. I'm getting a lot of press. One of the authors that I reviewed her book, she got over 598 impressions that people read her book.
Wow.
And my book, before I forget, Mirror Image, is on Amazon. It seems to be doing okay. And if you did something wrong, the mirror is going to wake you up and going to tell you to look at the face in the mirror that's yours. The mirror is going to replay what you did wrong. And if you don't undo it, you're going to wind up with a face in the mirror doing it forever. It teaches people not to do the wrong thing. It's scary. Yeah, I'm so proud of myself. And for the first time yesterday... Yeah, it's different. The second half of the book is from my series, My Faces Behind the Stone series, people that are wrongly accused and people that whose voices were silent and people who deserve whatever I gave them, seriously. So where can everybody find out about you? And are you going to do – I have to do this because Gina wants to know. Are you going to do another tour with them because they're the best? They've done a couple of tours with them.
Yeah, I'm really happy with Gina and her team. They're doing great work. I really like the communication and stuff that Partners in Crime, what your people are providing. So yeah, absolutely, I'm very happy with them. And they're going to have to help me out with my next book when it comes out. That's what I'm working on right now is this next book. I'm taking my time with it because like I did with this one, I want to get it right. And I have a lot of other hobbies and stuff to do too. We travel a lot, and unfortunately I'm retired now, so I have time to do that kind of thing. I enjoy writing, and I'm going to keep writing for the foreseeable future. And the next book is Jake Ward Book 2 for sure. You can learn more about my work, on Goodreads. I have a profile on Amazon there, but also on my website. DavidAWilson.com, Wilson with two L's. I'm a little bit weird that way. Someone in my ancestry decided they wanted to be special, I guess. So DavidAWilson, WILLSON.com. And I also post book reviews there. And just every once in a while, I just write about something that's kind of interesting me. And so you can kind of get a peek into my mind and what I'm thinking about there.
Which reminds me of the fact that I spelled your name right and Blog Talk spelled it wrong. I have to add an L to your name. This is what
I
go
okay.
Every
I'm
single
used
day.
To it.
I know
I'm
spelled
very
it
used
right.
To that.
But I want to thank
well,
you.
Well, everybody
so much
spells their name, but.
Whole day.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be David, WILLSON. I know I have a book in front of me. I give away my books to my dermatologist. I don't have to see him. I just bring them 20 every month, and he loves me forever. So yours is going in the file. His wife likes to read
nice.
Whatever I wrote. But thank you so much. I'm sorry you had to get up so early. Everybody, beautiful. It's a beautiful day here. Let's see, what do we have a high of? Oh, my God, it's 54 degrees. It's never been that way for 2 weeks. And, my God, it's like hot. I don't even need a jacket. So, everybody,
wow.
Have a great day. David, stay warm. Everybody, have a great day, and bye.